Hey everybody, it's Pod Vader here. Coming up on today's Next Fan Up, you're going to hear this.
When James says that the Jaguars are to keep things interesting in the AFC South, that sort of implies that things have been interesting.
And this.
Looking at this game, trying to figure out how would the Eagles beat the Cardinals, aside from relying on their amazing special teams.
And this.
You heard his throwing thumb, which is probably the most important finger on your hand if you're throwing a football.
Unless you deflate the ball, then you'll be fine.
Now that you know what you're going to hear, let's get the show started now.
Listen.
Hello?
We go out, we hit people in the mouth.
You play to win the game.
Next Fan Up.
I want winners.
Featuring Pod Vader and the Superfans.
But they are who we thought they were.
Oh, look, the garbage truck arrives just in time. As soon as I hit the open, there it is, sitting right outside my window. Now, you might say, well, Jay, it's a podcast. You could restart the show so we don't have to hear the garbage truck in the background. But no, I bring you real life here, people, on the Next Fan Up podcast. I'm Pod Vader. I'm joined by two of our super fans, Andrew, representing the Jets. Hello, Andrew.
Life is good, Pod. What's going on?
It is a good life. And James, our Texan super fan, who joined us back in week 6. Is that what we decided?
Yeah, it was somewhere around there.
He joined us by sending us an application to nextfanup@gmail.com, which is exactly what you can do because we have no super fan battles for you, ladies and gentlemen. It's funny, you know, 2 weeks ago we had 5. And that was our super fans going out and doing, you know, being proactive and recording these on their own. Then last week when I said I had a very special guest and I reunited with my mentor, Todd Wright, we only had 2. And this week, no special guest, just me, Andrew, and James, and no super fan battle. So I apologize to you ladies and gentlemen out there. We are clearly not delivering on our promise of being by the fan for the fan to the utmost of our abilities. And right. I know, Andrew, it's not your fault. And James, it's not your fault either.
It seems like it's one of those things where a team comes off a huge victory going into a bye week and comes off flat on the next week coming off the bye. That's what it seems like is happening with this podcast right now.
To me, it feels like it's an undefeated team, and then they lose their first game, and now they're getting ready to lose their second game in a row, because that's kind of what's happened this year. Let's talk about some more
Patriots of podcasting.
Well, not just the Patriots. The Packers lost 2 in a row. The Falcons obviously lost more than 2 in a row after they started undefeated. And there's only one undefeated team left. So we'll see if they remain undefeated with 3 weeks to go. I guess I was going to jump into the superfan picks, but instead I will now jump into the standings and the playoff standings. There are a few clinching scenarios this week. The Panthers can clinch home field advantage throughout with a win and an Arizona loss or tie. And, of course, a Carolina tie and an Arizona loss would do the same thing. The Cardinals have the opportunity to clinch a few more things. The Packers will clinch a playoff spot this week if a few things go their way. The Seahawks and the Vikings are also in a clinching mode if a few things go their way. The Patriots can clinch a first-round bye with a win and a Denver loss, or a win, a Cincinnati loss, and a Denver tie. Or if the Bengals do a few things, the Bengals are in clinching mode. The Broncos can clinch a few things. And that's it for now in the AFC, which brings us to looking at the AFC playoff standings, in which we have the Patriots back on top, thanks to the Bengals and the Broncos losing to teams they should have beaten. Of course, that was in my humble opinion. And my picks suck, as the Broncos were my lock of the week. Making my third straight lock going incorrect. Sorry, folks. We'll have more on that in just a few minutes. The Colts are your fourth seed, as they are currently the AFC South champion, but they are going head-to-head with the Texans. So that's a big game, obviously, this week. The Chiefs and the Jets hold the current wild card spots with the Steelers on the outside, tied with those teams in record, but obviously losing the tiebreaker due to win percentage in conference games right now. The Steelers, I think, is the darling team. We had a few of those darling teams in the preseason. Right now, the Steelers are the media darlings. Everyone saying no one wants to see the Steelers in the playoffs. I don't feel that way.
I usually when all these media narratives pop up, I try to find some type of way to be contrarian or something, to find a different angle, but to me, it's not even close. The Steelers, out of those three teams, the Steelers, the Jets, and the Chiefs, the Steelers are the number one team when it comes to the team I wouldn't want to see, just based off the fact, even without Le'Veon Bell, they're the best offense in football, and they've gotten faster on defense with guys like Ryan Shazier, and then Cameron Hayward and Stephon Tuitt have played well on the line. They to me, are the number one team in that conversation, and it says right now that they're on the outside looking in, but if all three teams, all three of Kansas City, the Jets, and the Steelers went out, my Jets would be the team that misses out. So take that playoff picture with a grain of salt right now, because it doesn't really tell you the exact story of what's actually going on.
Well, and to continue the playoff picture, not mathematically eliminated, the Raiders, Bills, and Texans at 6-7. They're two games back, obviously, with three games left to play. So they have a little bit of room, but it's looking unlikely for those teams. And obviously, we mentioned the Texans are in a different situation in the AFC South. The Jaguars and the Dolphins are also not mathematically eliminated at 5-8, but they essentially have no shot. Eliminated from the picture would be the Ravens, Chargers, Browns, and Titans. Let's move over to the NFC. Oh, go ahead, James.
Well, real quick, the Jaguars are interesting. They're only one game back in the AFC South, and they've been playing better than the Texans and Colts have been lately. So they don't really have a shot for the wild card, like you said, but they do have a shot at winning the division still. The sad, sad AFC South.
Well, no matter what, they're still going to be two games or a game behind whoever wins this week between you and the Colts. So it's still going to be tough.
I actually like the Jaguars because based off the fact that if you look at all 6 minutes on those three teams, on those three teams, the Jaguars offense is the best unit of those six units. And if that offense could carry them, they could put up 50 points every week. They're going to win. But if you look at their schedule, they have a matchup this week against it's a fading Falcons team, and then they have a big opportunity to go to Houston and win a game. That's in week 17. In week 16, they're in New Orleans. So they're facing pretty mediocre teams, but two of them are on the road. So we'll see if this young Jaguars team can live up to the occasion and win that division, because right now, that this game this week, the de facto AFC South title game is being quarterbacked by T.J. Yates and Charlie Whitehurst. So that's really all you need to know based on the competition that Jacksonville's facing.
Yeah, I hate the Jaguars. Every time I want them to win, they lose. And when I want them to lose, they win. So I hate you, Jacksonville. I hate you. I hate you. I hate you. All right, switching gears now to the NFC. We obviously have the undefeated Carolina Panthers at the top. The Cardinals have the second spot. That seems to be fairly firmed up, and obviously they've had clinching scenarios this week. The Packers are in third, and then, of course, the NFC least comes in, and currently the top of the NFC least are the Washington Redskins. The Seahawks and the Vikings hold the wild card, and we mentioned they have clinching scenarios this week. The Seahawks, if we're talking about the Steelers as the media darlings, the Seahawks are the NFC media darlings. Andrew, what do you have to say about that?
Yeah, I don't think that's a surprise at all. When Seattle started off, I believe it was 2-4, everyone started losing their collective shit, and it didn't make any sense to me. It just reeked of overreaction, and that's exactly what it is. And part of the reason why I thought Seattle would make the playoffs easily was because the NFC is a very shallow conference when you compare it to the AFC. five of the six slots are locked in. Right, the two buys, one of the Green Bay, Minnesota is going to win NFC North, and Seattle. The only question is going to be the NFC East, and one of those three teams are going to win. And right now, it's pretty hard to tell which team it's going to be. But if I had to pick one team, unfortunately, it'll have to be Sipko's Eagles, which means we're going to have to listen to more of and read more Slack conversations that make me want to shoot myself in the face. Sipko making some type of comment about how the Eagles are the best team in football because they punt.
They're special teams.
They got good special teams, yeah. I'd have to pick the Eagles just because I think the Giants have two players on their entire team who I would want. And the Redskins, Cousins has played well, but I still can't get behind that team no matter how hard I try. I can't trust them. And I think Philadelphia probably has the easiest schedule left out of those three teams. So I guess give me the Eagles.
So you mentioned those NFC least teams. The Eagles and the Giants have the 9 and the 10 spot. And we're going to talk about the Giants a little bit later because I've got a good perspective on them right now. The Buccaneers are not mathematically eliminated. Of course, if they lose, then they are out. And my former boyfriends, the Falcons, who I broke up with, they were clearly downtrodden that I broke up with them and decided also not to show up last week. So it was a good thing. I broke up with them at the right time, I think. So goodbye, Atlanta. It was fun while it lasted, but you're no longer in my heart. Also not mathematically eliminated would be the Rams, the Saints, and the Bears, but highly unlikely any of those three teams are in. And the Lions, Niners, and Cowboys are definitely out. Although the Cowboys, I suppose, being only two games behind those NFC least teams, still have a shot. But obviously, I don't think they really do. So what does that all mean in terms of who gets to hear this?
With the first pick in the NFL draft,
we go to the league standings, and that honor belongs to the Tennessee Titans, followed by the Cleveland Browns and the San Diego Chargers. All three of those teams are at 3-10. Then we have the Cowboys, 49ers, Lions, and Ravens at 4-9. With the Bears, Saints, Dolphins, Rams, Jaguars following all of that up. Next up would be the Texans, Giants, Eagles, Bills, Falcons, a whole bunch of 6-7 teams. So the first pick in the draft is the Tennessee Titans. I saw a couple of mock drafts come out this week. They've got the Titans going defense in most of the drafts. The Browns picking second, and I've seen most of those mock drafts going with the Browns taking another quarterback. I mean, they need one, but I mean, man, that's just not the way you want to try and build your team, picking a quarterback every year.
Well, that's the issue, though, because if you're the Browns, you don't know if you have a quarterback, and you would have known if you played Manziel most of this year, but now you have only a couple games to see what he can do, and if he continues to play like how he's been playing decent. Like, he's making one or two mistakes a game, but he's making a couple of plays. He's avoiding sacks. And if he continues to play this way, then maybe you don't take a quarterback, considering, at least right now, because as we all know, all this can change with the combine and the workouts. But right now, like, it seems like the quarterbacks are more middle-of-the-road first-round picks as opposed to, like, a top guy. I mean, people like Jared Goff from Cal and Paxton Lynch from Memphis. I mean, I haven't watched enough of that yet to really make a decision, make a judgment, but it just shows how incompetent from the top down, from the owner to the GM to the coach, how they just can't get on the same page in Cleveland to actually be able to make a decision on if they need to take a quarterback or not. And maybe Manziel will give them a reason to take a guy these next couple of weeks if he stinks up the joint, or maybe he'll give them a reason to take someone else and continues to play well. But the fact that they didn't leave themselves a large enough sample size just shows the incompetence going around that organization.
Yeah, it's a
definitely not a good spot to be in if you're Cleveland. And we talked about Cleveland a lot last week. So give last week's show a listen. You can download it now on iTunes or Stitcher or other places, and leave us a review. That'd be great if you did that. iTunes, next fan up, download, subscribe. Love it. Now to the pigskin pick'ems. Sitko has been in the lead for most of the season, but he has finally relinquished the top spot to our Steelers superfan, Greg, who had a great week last week with 13 right picks. Sitko did not have such a great week with only 8. I had, I guess, a so-so week with 10, but I'm really not in any sort of contention for anything. Not in this league, not in this pick pool, at least. My picks on the numbers, oddly enough, have been great. My locks of the week have sucked. I don't know how that works, but somehow it's working for me. So I'm going to have it keep working for me. I'm going to tie for fourth in the next fan up pigskin pick'em league. Although, honestly, there's only 10 of us who have made regular picks since week one. So that's really died off as well. Let's move on now and talk about specific games. We have another color rush tonight, gentlemen. The Tampa Bay Buccaneers at the St. Louis Rams. The Bucs will be all red. The Rams apparently are going to be in all yellow. Something about this says I'm going to puke.
Well, are you going to puke by watching the game itself or just looking at the jerseys? Because damn, NFL Network got screwed this week, Thursday night game. I mean, Saturday night game doesn't seem too hot either, but tonight, I mean, there's the only really reason to watch is to watch the young talent on both these teams, with Tampa, with Jameis and Mike Evans and Levante David and Gerald McCoy, and like St. Louis with like Todd Gurley and Aaron Donald and some of those young guys they got going in the secondary. But this game really means nothing for either team. And it's unfortunate because if Tampa Bay takes care of business last week in New Orleans, then this action game has some playoff implications. But right now, I mean, you have to be a real football fan to watch this game.
Yeah, on top of that, this may be the last game that St. Louis plays in St. Louis. It's the last home game of the year. And with all the talk of Kroenke just moving the team despite what the NFL wants, you know, should be a great 50% turnout at the Edward Jones Dome.
That's also true. But I mean, with those, I hope if they move to LA, they don't go with a pukey yellow color scheme for another color rush. Honestly, I hope if they move to LA, they change their they change to something other than the Rams. My guess is they won't. But it would be nice to have something other than the Rams. My pick in this game, I'm going with Tampa Bay. Guys, they're right now underdogs by a half point. What I'm looking at, I just like Jameis Winston a little bit better. I like Tampa Bay overall a little bit better. The Rams are that roller coaster team. Usually, when they're at home, they go on the upslope on the roller coaster. But I'm going to go with Tampa here to go 7-7 and keep their slim playoff chances alive, as slim as they are. Andrew.
Yeah, I'm gonna go with Tampa Bay, just based off the fact it seems like they match up pretty well with St. Louis, and that St. Louis is gonna want to run the ball, and got with guys like Gerald McCoy and Levante David. I mean, I don't think Quan Alexander's playing anymore. I think he's been suspended, but they have the personnel on the defensive side of the ball to at least slow down Gurley and make Case Keenum beat them. And I don't think that's not going to happen. Case Keenum's not going to beat them. And Tampa has enough weapons and offense to put up points on a St. Louis defense that used to be one of the most talented in the league, but are just decimated by injuries right now. Robert Quinn's no longer playing. Alec Ogletree's out. So give me Tampa Bay by 10 points or so.
James.
I'm actually going to take the Rams and invoke Jeff Fisher on this one. He only knows how to finish a season 6-10 or 7-9. Looking at the Rams' upcoming schedule, they got the Seahawks and the 49ers. If they don't get this win, they're not going to get up to the Jeff Fisher special of 7-9.
Well, I think we learned today that, you know, this game is four quarters long.
No, it's not the end of the podcast. Don't turn it off. You invoked Jeff Fisher. I had to play him. By the way, there's been some good Jeff Fisher sound this season, too. I got to do a better job of getting that. But, you know, the regular day job keeps me from doing fun podcast stuff. I think I mentioned I was taking the Bucks. Yes, I did. So we move on to the special Saturday night game. Featuring Andrew's Jets at the Dallas Cowboys, featuring my former backup quarterback, Matt Castle. To me, this is a slaughter. That's another game that you don't necessarily have to watch. If I could lock in the Jets, I would. But I can't, so I won't. But I would if I could. I like the Jets here, and I like them big, Andrew.
Why are you doing this to me, Pod? Why are you setting me up for this gut punch? Because
we're at that point of the season where there's certain things that are just obvious. To me, it's just obvious the Cowboys are done for the season. They have nothing left to play for. Yes, they have. I mentioned earlier that they have a slim chance at the NFC East title, but that's not going to happen. It's just not. And the Jets have that playoff spot, and they're going to want to keep it. And they're a better team than the Cowboys are right now.
See, I don't disagree with anything you just said, but as a Jets fan, I just always have to have my guard up just a bit. But it's true, when you look at the personnel of these two teams, it's really not even close. Especially with Matt Castle playing quarterbacks, throwing the ball 5 yards down the field at a time. This game is going to come down to how many third and longs the Jets defense are able to put Matt Castle in. And what that's going to come down to is probably a very fun matchup between two of the best units in football, between the Dallas Cowboys offensive line and the Jets D-line. Off the top of my head, there are at least 6-7 Pro Bowl-type players between those two lines, and that's going to decide the game. But the Jets have advantages everywhere. I don't think that Dallas has the corners to slow down Marshall or Decker. Last week, Eddie Lacy and James Starks ran all over the Dallas Cowboys defense, and Chris Ivory and Bilal Powell have both been playing well this year. The Jets defense was flying all over the field last week against Mariota. Everything looks good if you're the Jets, and that's what scares me, because when everything looks good, that's when they come and punch you right in the gut. And on national television on a Saturday night, where most of the country is going to be watching, is a prime spot for that to happen.
What do you think, James?
Well, going back to the battle that I had with Andrew, the last time the Jets traveled to Texas, they were set up in that game as well to just completely dominate the Texans. Everything that the Jets did looked to be a very good counter to what the Texans were able to stop, and they lost that game. However, the Cowboys, they don't have any offensive weapons, not that Houston really did either. I think they've kind of phoned in the rest of their season. Dez Bryant hasn't recovered from that foot injury, so he's not looking like the Dez Bryant that we've all come to know. And I guess we're going to have to sweep this as being for the Jets.
Right. So James talks about that Texans game. It's actually very similar in that you know Dallas is going to want to throw the ball at Dez, and they're going to try to run the ball. So the problem with the Texans game is that the Jets left Revis on an island against Hopkins, and Hopkins just burned him and destroyed him. I think Bowles is gonna give Revis a little more help on Dez this week. And again, Dez hasn't looked healthy, and it's nowhere in the class of DeAndre Hopkins, at least for this year. So the Jets again should have a rather simple game plan to win this game, but it's just very concerning to me. I think the Jets are gonna win. I'm going to say they win by 10 points. They're going to be up, it's going to be a close game most of the game, and then Jets are going to score a touchdown to put the game away late in the fourth quarter. But I won't be surprised if, Sunday I have no interest in watching any type of football because the Jets blow this game, their season's over, because they probably have to win out to make the playoffs. And that includes next week's game against the Patriots. So they can't not show up Saturday night.
Yeah, it's a must-win game for the Jets if they want to keep their playoff hopes alive. Up next, my my ex-boyfriends, the Falcons, are against the team I hate the most, the Jacksonville Jaguars. Why have you done this to me, NFL? Man, I hate the Jaguars, but they are my ex-boyfriends, and I'm not going back to them. So I'm going to take the Jaguars, but I hate it. I hate it. I hate it a lot. James, what do you have to say?
Yeah, I'm going to take the Jaguars to keep things interesting in the AFC South. And as much publicity as Blake Bortles has gotten for, you know, turning this franchise around and starting, you know, putting up 51 points, he's really not – he's been a great fantasy quarterback. He's put up a lot of numbers, but he still makes bad decisions. He's still not a you know, as an expert at identifying not NFL quarterbacks with the Texans, he's not really an NFL quarterback yet. He could become that. The advantage, though, is that he's playing this Atlanta team that just has fallen off a cliff. You know, I think that they see an opportunity to become relevant in the AFC South again. They see an opportunity to, you know, get the fans interested, and you know, they're gonna take this one at home.
When James says that the Jaguars are to keep things interesting in the AFC South, that sort of implies that things have been interesting. But I guess if you're watching through a prism of a Texans fan, I guess it is pretty interesting because you're 6-7 and you're probably the favorite in that division. But when it comes to this game, yeah, it's sort of very similar teams in that they both could go completely quiet, like very quickly, and then just blow up at any moment. Like if you watched the first half of the Jags game last week, Jags put up 51 points, but they had 6 points with 2 minutes left in the second quarter, and then all of a sudden they just blew up. Either on Andre Branch had a defensive touchdown, and then they Rashad Green had a punt return touchdown. But I guess I have more faith in the Jaguars being able to put up points in Atlanta, who ridiculously has become one of, if not the worst offensive teams in football, with guys like Julio Jones and Devontae Freeman and a pretty well-respected offensive coordinator and Kyle Shanahan running the show.
Yeah, well, Devontae Freeman has been out for a couple of weeks. Matt Ryan, I don't know what happened to him. He has not been the Matt Ryan of old. He has not been the Matt Ryan who in 2011 destroyed the Jaguars 41-14 with 3 touchdown passes. By the way, the last time the Jaguars beat the Falcons was in 2007. Some useless stats there for you folks. So listen, I don't know what's going on with my boyfriends, but we're exes now. I don't hate them. We're kind of like friendly exes, but I really do hate the Jaguars. It pains me a lot to pick them because I hate you, Jacksonville. I hate you. The Bills and the Redskins are next up as our second game here on Sunday. This, I think, has the makings of a real interesting game. One, for the Bills to keep their slim playoff hopes alive, and the Redskins, of course, leading the NFC East. Also, because I think these two teams are pretty evenly matched. And when I'm looking at evenly matched teams, I look at home field as my tiebreaker, and thus I'm going to take the Redskins. Andrew?
I'm going to go with Buffalo. Maybe it's just my biases always shining through when it comes to the Redskins, Matt. Cousins, yeah, well, Cousins is like, it's your typical middle-of-the-road quarterback. And I think Rex Ryan is able to slow those guys down and make them, force them into mistakes. Watching that Bills-Eagles game last week, Buffalo, when Rex came out on the press conference and said, oh, we outplayed them, it reeked of like typical Rex Ryan press conference bravado, and that, oh, he thinks his team is always the better team. But the truth is they probably were. They just can't stop getting penalties. And it's going to be one of those things where for 1 week, Rex is going to get through to his team to stop being idiots and stop drawing flags. And maybe this is the week that he forces a couple of Kirk Cousins turnovers and Buffalo pulls out the victory in Washington.
Number Fire has Buffalo's likelihood of -1 at 54.9%. That makes me feel a lot better, James.
Yeah, I'm going to have to actually go with the Redskins as well. And it goes back to what Andrew hinted at with the Buffalo penalties. They've had six games where they've taken more than 10 penalties, or had more than 10 accepted penalties. You know, they have nearly 1,100 yards of accepted penalties against them. You know, Kirk Cousins may not be a great quarterback. He's going to hit free agency, so he's got a great three-game stretch to put up some numbers and just cash in on a big paycheck. So I think he's going to take advantage of that, and you know, Redskins are going to go in, or going to stay in position at in the lead of the NFC East.
Next up, we have the Chicago Bears at the Minnesota Vikings, the Vikings that I famously did not believe in and are now going to cost me some sort of wager with Christopher Harris over at Harris Football. By the way, you want some great fantasy tips? I know you're still playing some DFS. If you're out of the playoffs, you're going to want to check out harrisfootball.com. The Bears at the Vikings, I mean... The Bears seem to have that team that you want, that look like the Bears have that team that on paper looks like they should have a much better record than what they do, but they don't. And the Vikings, in my opinion, have a roster on paper that they have a better record than what they should have, but they don't. They have a whatever. I think you all know what I'm trying to say. Essentially, I'm going to go with the Vikings because they've proved it. This isn't paper. This is football. The Vikings have proved it. They've won my respect. Congratulations, Minnesota. You're going to be in the playoffs.
See, I actually couldn't disagree more with everything you just said. But because coming into this year, I thought the Bears were going to be one of the worst teams in football. They had a lot of young guys on their offensive line. They Cutler was coming off an awful year. They were transitioning to a new scheme on defense with Vic Fangio. Maybe some guys like Willie Young didn't fit the scheme. And these past 2 weeks, if Robbie Gould hits a couple of field goals, they're 7-6. And if they win this game, they're in the playoff picture. But he didn't make those field goals, and they're 5-8. It just I'm not the biggest John Fox fan in the world. It seems like he's just he's that typical conservative coach who's going to punt on 4th-and-2 from the opponent's 40-yard line. But he's done a very, very good job with that team. And I think it's going to be one of those things where the Jets 2 years ago under a new coach, it was a new GM under Rex, went 8-8 when they probably should have went like 5-11. And then the next year, that's what ended up happening. So maybe next year Chicago comes down to earth. And for Minnesota, they're right where I thought they'd be. So they'd be like a 10-6 team. They have a lot of talent on defense. I'm not sure what the situation is this week with Anthony Barr, Harrison Smith, and Linval Joseph. But those guys didn't play last Thursday and lost to Arizona. But even if they don't play, I still think Minnesota has enough talent on both sides of the ball to pull out a victory they probably need. But the truth is, if you look at the rest of the NFC, they could lose this game and still make the playoffs.
James?
Yeah, for all the reasons. On top of that, you know, what little defensive help Chicago has, they're going to still probably be without Pernell McPhee. Antoine Roll is going to be out, it looks like. Going to have to go with Minnesota here.
What I don't like about it is number fire loves Minnesota -5.5 at 53.2%. What I do love about it is the Vikings have won 3 of their past 4, including the last game played on November 1st and last year, which was at Minnesota on December 28th. So Minnesota likes playing against the Bears because they usually end up winning. Here's a number that scares me, but after last week, I'm not all that scared. They're not facing against a team with a phenomenal special teams like the Philadelphia Eagles. So the Titans versus the Patriots. The Patriots are -14.5 point favorites. The number does have me a little scared, but I'm going to take the Patriots and the number. I just, you know, the Titans last week They were only really able to score when they ran a trick wildcat play and a long pass to Marcus Mariota. I mean, you could do that against the Patriots, but you're only going to be able to do it once. And I think the Patriots are going to be able to score on you at least three times. James?
Yeah, my biggest concern is for anybody who has Tom Brady as their quarterback in fantasy in the playoffs here, that he might get pulled by the third quarter just to keep him healthy. Tennessee is a bad team. They weren't expected to be, you know, great. They were just drafted at the top of the draft last year. They're going to be back there again this year. So hopefully they can get Mariota a couple weapons or shore up the defense this year.
Yeah. By the way, you bring up a good point about the injuries. One quick thing here, Andrew, about the injuries, because the Patriots seem to be the poster boy for injuries this year. Every team has injuries, and there's some teams that have more marquee injuries, but the Pats have had these injuries and keep finding, you know, stuff off the pile to keep moving on. Now, at the running back position, LeGarrette Blount now done for the season. I still like their depth. James White has been a nice, has finally shown that he was drafted, well, shown why he was drafted, and has, you know, filled in nicely for Deion Lewis. He hasn't like Deion Lewis, but he's getting there for sure. Brandon Bolden has always been a good utility back. And so I'm not that concerned. Plus, they weren't really relying on LeGarrette Blount all that much. Dominic Easley on the defensive line was part of a pretty solid rotation. And so while obviously losing a player like him hurts a little bit, the Pats had some depth on the defensive line that hadn't been touched like some of the other positions had been on the offensive line and at wide receiver. Speaking of which, and Andrew, you can speak a little bit more on this. The Patriots made some interesting waiver wire claims this week, including Leonard Hankerson at wide receiver, who was on the IR for the Falcons and then waived, which I don't know why the Patriots would want another injured wide receiver. That doesn't seem to make a lot of sense. But go ahead, Andrew.
No, he'll be able to play. Like he's not on the IR for the Patriots. Once he got released from Atlanta,
right,
going to be able to play. I mean, he's a talented guy. He just has trouble holding on to the ball sometimes. Like he could provide value. Like he'll give you like
Brandon LaFell.
Like I was about to say, he'll give you like what 85 to 90% of what Brandon LaFell gives you. I don't know if that's something you're interested in, Pod, but that's but that's what you're going to find on the waiver wire. And you're talking about the injuries. There's another team in the league who I'd point to who we're going to get to soon that. It's like it's an apocalypse with their roster, but as for this game, this isn't going to be close. The Patriots are going to win, and you didn't forget to mention one injury that I think is actually the biggest injury of the Patriots that came out this week. Is that Devin McCourty has a high ankle sprain, and it's unlikely to play in this game, and probably not going to play in the Jet game, which gives me hope as a Jet fan because he's one of the most important guys on your defense, and I think next week I'm already setting myself up. I'm setting myself up for Dallas just to come in. I'm already thinking about the Patriots. But like next week, the Patriots are banged up, and the Jets are going to need that game. The Patriots probably most likely aren't going to need that game. But Devin McCourty, high ankle sprain, that's a big injury. I believe De'Ron Harmon is taking over, his fellow Rutgers alum. But Patriots big in this game.
Yeah, in terms of this game, the Devin McCourty injury, I'm not that concerned about. Next week, it is a little bit more concerning. But at the same time, you know, these younger safeties, you know, have got a little seasoning under them. And the corners haven't, you know, have proven to be much better than what we thought they were going to be at the beginning of the season. So am I concerned? Yes. Am I worried? That's the life of a Patriots fan. All right, James, here you go. The Houston Texans at the Indianapolis Colts. The Colts are favored by 1.5, despite the fact that Clipboard Jesus is your quarterback. But the Texans have T.J. Yates. Honestly, I think T.J. Yates is a better quarterback than Charlie Whitehurst. And I think the Texans have a better team than the Indianapolis Colts. And I'm going to take the Texans here on the road to grab hold of the NFC South. James, the floor is yours.
Well, I don't think a 500 record will grab the whole of the NFC South. The AFC South is a pretty safe bet.
You're right. Yes. Thank you for correcting me.
Well, you mentioned TJ Yates. He does have the two Texans playoff victories under his belt in the franchise history. The problem is that we have never beat Indianapolis in Indianapolis, and this includes the season that they went 2-14 and we lost to Dan Orlovsky. So we're not facing Andrew Luck. We're probably not facing Matt Hasselbeck, but we are facing a quarterback that is better than Dan Orlovsky. It looks like Indianapolis is also going to be getting their left tackle. I can't remember his name right now, but they're also getting their linebacker Freeman back for this game. Not that they really need additional help stopping our offense, but that will definitely help them. It's definitely a bigger game for the Texans versus the Colts. The Colts only have to face Miami and Tennessee in the remaining 2 weeks. So, you know, even if they lose this game, if Texans have Tennessee and Jacksonville to finish out the season, if they lose one of those games, basically if the teams go 2-3 and the Texans beat the Colts today, the Colts will end up taking the tiebreaker back from the Texans. So if Texans lose today, it eliminates them from the playoffs, and it basically guarantees the Colts getting another playoff bid. What's frustrating is that you see teams like Seattle bringing in Bryce Brown. Your team, Pod, brought in Monte Ball, and it looks like they're bringing in Steven Jackson, at least for a workout. Meanwhile, we're still sticking with Chris Polk and Alfred Blue in our running game. The Colts have allowed about 4.3 yards per carry against opposing running backs. So here's a game where we could definitely use our above-average offensive line to open up the running game, maybe not rely entirely on TJ Yates to chuck the ball deep to DeAndre Hopkins 15 times this game. As exciting as those plays are, we do need a little bit balance on offense. And by balance, I mean something to counterpoint the three and outs that we are very good at having. At the end of the day, you know, hope springs eternal. I think this is finally the year that we beat the Colts. But the way that that's going to have to happen is we're going to have to get after Clipboard Jesus with J.J. Watt and Jadeveon Clowney and just eliminate their older players. The last time we played them, Andre Johnson had a nice revenge game against us, and Frank Gore ran wild. So I'm thinking it's going to be a close game, like 17-13, because if Colts get more than 17 points, I don't think we can score more than that.
You know, it's funny you mention a low score, but the Texans have allowed a generous 2.38 points per drive during the past two games after they had allowed a league low 0.83 per drive from week 9 to week 12. The Colts just allowed the Jaguars to set franchise offensive records in week 14. By the way, if you can't tell, I'm reading this, ESPN Stats and Info. I actually agree with the ESPN Stats and Info. I see a much higher scoring game despite the lack of talent, if you want to say that, at quarterback. Andrew, how do you see this game playing out?
To me, there's not a single thing that Indianapolis does right now that impresses me. Their roster is completely barren of talent. We all knew this. Andrew Luck was carrying this roster for the past 2-3 years, and now Matt Hasselbeck, which those couple of weeks when he first came in, he played pretty decently, but I think it was pretty obvious to everybody that wasn't going to last. And now they have Clipboard Jesus no longer holding the clipboard and being on the field behind that atrocious offensive line. James mentioned Costanzo is coming back, but I don't think that's going to make that big a difference. The thing that this game's going to come down to is how healthy J.J. Watt is. J.J. Watt had his worst game, his worst graded game by PFF since his rookie year. This past week when he had that club on his hand. So if he could come back even 50-60% of what he usually is, I think he's going to make enough of an impact on that side of the ball for Houston to pull out the victory. And so I think that's what's going to happen. Texans win, 21-13.
You know, this is one of those instances where I wish I had one of those former players to talk to, because I'm curious. I mean, yes, he broke his hand, but we've seen defensive linemen play with clubs before and do quite well. So it couldn't be just the hand. And I know it wasn't the Patriots offensive line necessarily, but maybe it was. It does seem odd, though, that he breaks his hand and has one of his worst games in his career. I mean, a defensive lineman needs his hand a little bit, but does he need it that much? I don't know. By the way, what? Oh, boy. I'm sorry. I was just thinking of all the inappropriate things my 12-year-old son says about JPP. 58.2% is the likelihood Houston beats Indianapolis. I hate that number. Fire loves Houston. I'm still sticking with them, though. Kansas City is at the Baltimore Ravens. I'm assuming, Andrew, this is the team that you were talking about, decimated by the apocalypse on their roster, the Baltimore Ravens. I'm going to take the Chiefs. If I could lock them in, I would, but I can't, so I won't, but I would if I could.
Yeah, this, as a Jets fan, you really need the Chiefs to lose a game, but you just look at their schedule and it's just not, it doesn't look like it's going to happen. And this Ravens team, Flacco's out the year, Forsett's out the year. They have a couple offensive linemen, Eugene Monroe and Jeremy Zudar out the year. On defense, Terrell Suggs got injured at the beginning of the year. Matt Elam, the first-round pick a couple years ago, was out. They have some other injuries in the secondary. It's an absolute disaster there. And as for Kansas City, as a Jets fan, I was hoping this past couple of weeks that I honestly think it's not close. I was having this argument with Nick, our Chiefs fan, that those three teams, Pittsburgh, Kansas City, and the Jets, I think Kansas City is clearly the third most talented team of those three, but they're clearly the most likely to make the playoffs. So I don't see Baltimore being able to beat Kansas City, even though they are at home. But who knows? Maybe Jimmy Clausen does us a favor and does something to put the Chiefs into the loss column.
James, what do you think?
Yeah, I haven't seen if they're going to get Justin Houston back, but I mean, if you're the Chiefs, there's no sense in rushing him back against Baltimore. Anytime that your best case scenario is your 2015 Matt Schaub is going to be your starter, things aren't looking that great. They went out and signed Ryan Mallett and are saying that, you know, despite him only being on the team for a little bit less than a week now, he may see action later this season. That's not a great sign. It's just a lost season for Baltimore. So Kansas City is going to win big.
All righty. Moving on now to the Carolina Panthers at the New York Giants. This is where your intrepid host gets stupid. You want to talk about undefeated seasons, and you want to talk about the New York Giants. I can tell you a few things about a New York Giants team that always looks like it's underperforming, but for some reason an undefeated team comes in and all of a sudden they're world beaters. Carolina, I want to warn you right now. I know undefeated teams. I've seen undefeated teams. You're not as good as those other undefeated teams. And the Giants, I've seen them before, and they're going to do to you exactly what they've done to my teams. I am calling for it here, ladies and gentlemen. This is my upset special. This is beyond an upset special. This is my lock of the week. Come on.
We've got to be the dumbest team in America in terms of playing the game.
And picking games. I'm locking in the New York Giants to beat the undefeated Carolina Panthers. And mainly it's just because I don't want an undefeated team in the NFL anymore. Go ahead. Bring on the ridicule.
This just sounds like pod as some like serious PTSD going on right now by picking the Giants. But the Giants have two guys on their team. They have Eli Manning and they have Odell Beckham. Like, you're not going to beat the best team in football, at least this year, with two guys. And if anybody has the personnel to beat those two guys, it's Carolina. They probably have the best cornerback in football right now in Josh Norman.
Not according to Rodney Harrison. Sorry.
Who's Rodney Harrison have the best cornerback in football?
No, Rodney and Josh Norman had a big Twitter beef this week. That's all. Continue.
I got anything to stay relevant, Ronnie Harrison. But, they have probably one of the top three best defenses in football. And I don't see any way the Giants are able to stop the power running of Cam Newton. And, yeah, Jonathan Stewart's not playing this week. But they have a couple of other guys they could run. I like Cameron Artis Payne. I liked him in college at Auburn. And Ted Ginn, if he gets behind the defense once or twice, that 7-14 points right there. And I think Carolina's going to do enough. I think the Giants are going to give him a game, though. I agree with that. But I don't think they have enough talent on either side of the ball to knock off undefeated Panthers.
By the way, in terms of going against me, NumberFire loves the Giants +5.5, 53.6%. Oh, NumberFire, why do you curse me so? James?
Well, Pod, that was a very good job channeling your inner Mercury Morris rooting against an undefeated season. I think the Panthers also looking to be without Greg Olsen. This is the game that Cam can absolutely solidify his MVP status. If he can go in there without Greg Olsen or with a limited Greg Olsen, without Jonathan Stewart, against a team with a reputation of being these giant slayers, it pretty much will end the discussion around who gets the MVP. I think that the defense will prevent the Giants from putting up enough points, to even threaten Carolina's undefeated season here. So I got Carolina, maybe not by, a touchdown or two, but, probably right around that 5-point number is good.
You know, the worst part about this whole thing is now I have to root for the stinking Giants. It feels icky, man. It just doesn't feel right. Cleveland is at Seattle. NumberFire says Seattle -14.5 is only a 44.4% likelihood. Guess what, NumberFire? You finally came through for me. I like the Seahawks. I like them big. I don't even think there's much need to discuss this game further. But, Andrew, I know you're going to give us some more stuff to talk about.
I mean, Cleveland looked good last week just because they were able to run the ball with Duke Johnson and Isaiah Crowell. Both had very good games. That's not going to be the case this week against Seattle. They're going to put Manziel into tougher situations, and they're going to force him to a couple of mistakes. It's just what's going to happen, considering Manziel hasn't gotten the reps he should have gotten this year. So give me Seattle big. This is going to be a blowout.
James?
No need to pile on the Browns even more than what they already have been.
next up, by the way, that was our first 4 o'clock game of the week. We got a lot more 4 o'clock games this week than we had last week. We move on now to the Packers at the Raiders. And this is one of those games, guys, where the Packers, this reminds me of one of the games earlier that the Packers played this year, where it was like, oh, the Packers should win. And then they sort of struggled and then they ended up losing. I can see something similar happening here where the Packers are just sort of on cruise control and the Raiders are still fighting for their slim playoff chances. I'm going to go. I haven't done this in a while, but I'm giving you another upset special, ladies and gentlemen.
We've got to be the dumbest team in America in terms of playing the game.
Stop it. I know I'm dumb. I'm going to take the Raiders to win at home to pull off a surprising upset against the Green Bay Packers. And NumberFire, of course, agrees with me. +3, 52.7% for the Raiders. How dare you, NumberFire? What do you think, Andrew?
So last week, the Raiders beat the Broncos because of two things. They were able to stop Brock Osweiler and the Denver offense in the red zone 4 times in the first half, which only led to 12 points for Denver. I see that very unlikely that they're able to do that to Aaron Rodgers. He's going to get at least 2 or 3 of those into the end zone. And Khalil Mack just dominated. Like one of the best games I've seen from an outside pass rusher in years. He had 5 sacks. He had a couple of quarterback hits. He had another hurry or two, and he played well in the run game. So he just destroyed that the right side of that Broncos offensive line. But Green Bay has a better offensive line than Denver does, and Rodgers has better pocket presence than Osweiler does. I don't think the Raiders are going to be able to do enough to keep up with Green Bay in this game, so give me the Packers.
James?
I'm actually going to take the Raiders. Like you mentioned already, Pod, the Packers just look like they've been on cruise control. They've had several games that have come down to the last play, famously the Rodgers to Rodgers Hail Mary. Sam Shields is not going to be in this game. So Derek Carr, he has no fear of chucking the ball 50 times in a game. He's got Amari Cooper. He's got Michael Crabtree. And, Green Bay may be leading in the NFC North, but you look at them and you can't really say the one thing that they do really well. And in years past, when they've been able to rely on Aaron Rodgers to just pick the team up and carry them, Rodgers is his worst quarterback rating in 7 years. It might finally be the year that you can't rely solely on Aaron Rodgers.
We're not a very good football team right now, obviously.
Oh, come on, Mark Trestman, stop it. I just hit a random drop. The Cincinnati Bengals are at the San Francisco 49ers. This is another one where I don't think we need to discuss much. I think the Bengals will win. I think they're going to win easily. I just haven't been a believer in the Niners all season, and the Niners really give me no reason to believe in them here. What do you say, James?
I say this is a great welcome to the NFL AJ McCarron game. Even though we won't have Tyler Eifert, he gets to face just a depleted San Francisco defense. And it's more depleted from all the retirements from the off season, but they just don't have the talent that they've had the past several years.
Andrew,
I think we have to talk about Andy Dalton right now, because for years it was more one of those Kirk Cousins things with me where I just thought Dalton had a limited ceiling. He wasn't going to be able to take the team anywhere, and that they're going to lose in the first weekend of the playoffs every year for the next 5-6 years. This year, he has played well above my expectations and most other people's expectations, and it's just really a shame for him to hurt himself now, because it's a possibility he comes back in January in the playoff game, isn't completely healthy because he hurt his throwing thumb, which is gives you right. the grip on the ball. It's probably the most important finger on your hand if you're throwing a football.
And unless you deflate the ball, then you'll be fine.
Wow, that's a shocker. I'm surprised you're actually bringing that up, Pod. But
I just wanted to make it was an obvious joke that had to be made.
But it's gonna suck if he comes back and then just lays an egg in the playoffs and everyone goes back to the Dalton can't win in January, which is a shame, because he's a different quarterback this year. He's so much more accurate deep down the field. And if you watch these games, every week AJ Green or Marvin Jones is having a bomb thrown right into their hands for a touchdown, and to see Dalton go down, it's just not what you want to see. It's just literally a microcosm of this whole NFL year, where it just seems every guy is going down at the worst possible time.
Yeah, it's certainly you're taking the Bengals.
Yeah.
It's certainly not a good time to lose your quarterback if you're the Cincinnati Bengals, especially when you're in a fight to try and get that first round bye, because that's really what they're going to need to try and do, is try and get that extra week to give Dalton a chance to heal up. But then again, if you end up facing that NFC South team, maybe that's still a bye week anyway. The Broncos are at the Steelers. And this one's an interesting one too, because we've got the media darlings and we got the Denver Broncos. And as we just mentioned, the Bengals are fighting for that first round bye, just like the Denver Broncos are. So how do I see this game playing out? Well, the Steelers are 6.5 point favorites. I think that's a little high. That said, I'm going to take the Steelers to win this game, just because I believe in Ben Roethlisberger more than I believe in Brock Osweiler. Andrew?
Yeah, so rewatching that game, the Denver game last week, it was clear to me that Osweiler wasn't the issue. Osweiler played a decent game. He didn't really hurt Denver in any way. He hit Vernon Davis in the hands a couple of times, and he was dropped. Vernon Davis also decided to run backwards on a couple of plays where he might have had 8 to 10 yards, instead got like 3. And that defense played great against a very explosive Oakland offense. If any team is going to be sort of a tune-up for Pittsburgh, I think Oakland would probably be it. And Denver, their defense, which is to me the best in the league, showed up. So this game is clearly the game of the week. And as a Jets fan, it is a very important one for us, as we most likely need Denver to beat Pittsburgh to have any shot of making the playoffs. So I'm going to go with Denver. This is more of a hope thing than me actually using my brain. Because, yeah, Roethlisberger over Osweiler all day, every day. But I just think Denver's defense is going to rise to the occasion after last week, where they might have – their defense is so good that they think that they should win every game no matter what happens on the other side of the ball. And I think they're going to come out and take it as a challenge that they're facing best offense in the league. So give me Denver 24-21.
Oh, I like you calling a score. James?
I think Pittsburgh will end up pulling the game out. I noticed that there's already talk about, if and when Peyton Manning will come back, which it's funny because, you know, Osweiler has the one, not even really a bad game by his standards, but one kind of subpar game where they lose to Oakland, and all of a sudden it's, hey, you know, remember we've got Peyton Manning just, you know, waiting, should be back here in a couple weeks. Gary Kubiak had to come out and say, no, Peyton's not going to play this week. At the end of the day, you know, they say, oh, Brock Osweiler takes too many sacks. You know, he's sacked at twice the rate that Peyton Manning was. And, you know, part of that is just being under center more, taking the dropbacks. And it's not even necessarily a bad thing that he's taking these sacks, because the alternative is he could be throwing up these lame duck passes like Peyton was, and that's how he got to the front of the pack, lead the league in interceptions. Osweiler's interception rate is a lot lower than Peyton's, even though his sack rate is up. Denver definitely has the best defense in the league, and Pittsburgh, you know, if not the best offense, one of the top three. It'll be a very entertaining game. I got to take Pittsburgh though, just because they're playing at home, and that's a huge home field advantage for them.
Do we know how this game did not get flexed into the Sunday night game? Is it because the Steelers have already played enough primetime games? Does anybody know?
I think the note was specifically to piss you off, Jay.
At this point, I don't get it, because this is the game of the week, and it's much better than the Sunday night game, but we're not there yet. Before we do start the breakdown of our final game, Ken, Charger superfan, called in, and he had a few things he wanted to say about his San Diego Chargers.
So this week, I had the opportunity to just demonstrate how god-awful my San Diego Chargers team is. First and foremost, the Chargers are playing the Dolphins this Sunday in Qualcomm Stadium. And I have never seen San Diego more depressed about this Chargers football team. And I'll give you a great example. First of all, if you're going to watch this game, don't. It's not worth watching. There's no playoff implications. And the Chargers only really have three options on offense anymore. First is Rivers getting sacked. Second is Melvin Gordon getting a 3-yard carry or less. And third is a receiver dropping a football. Now, the Chargers have given me a great opportunity to spend some quality time with my dad every single Sunday. We watch every game together. It's our tradition. It's great. Now, I had the opportunity to pick up some pretty decent seats for the game this Sunday at Qualcomm Stadium. They were 75% off face value. So just an unbelievable deal. So I called my dad up and I said, hey, Dad, do you want to go to the game this Sunday? This would be a great Christmas gift opportunity. I know they've been awful, but this might be their last game in San Diego. Let's go see Rivers one last time. It'll be great. And he said no. He said it's too depressing. He thought about it for maybe 30 seconds and said, I can't do it. I can't watch this football team in person. It's going to make me too sad. they have killed a part of me. The Chargers have killed a part of my father. My 71-year-old father has been destroyed by this football team. And you know what? I mean, although I did kind of want to go to the game, when he put it like that, I kind of agreed with him. I just can't do it. You know, I'll watch the game on Sunday because it's my team, but at the end of the day, man, they're awful. I don't know who to blame anymore. I don't know whether it's ownership. I don't know if it's management. I don't know if it's the head coach. All I know is it's not Phillip Rivers, because he still goes out there and puts it all on the line and can't do anything. It's pathetic. Putting up 3 points in a football game when you have, you know, a top 10 quarterback, I'm not going to fight for him being top five anymore. Not with putting 3 points up on the board week after week, but man, they're making my life hard, man. Just get me to next season. Hopefully Dean Spanos can't get a stadium down in LA, because at this point they're pretty much as good as gone. I've never been so reserved to watching my team leave and be so god awful, but it's hard, man.
Are you going to still follow them in LA, Ken?
You know, if they're putting up 3 points every week, I don't know if I can. If they lose and they're awful, or if I lose my team to LA and they're god awful, I don't know how I can. But, you know, I'm emotional now because of how terrible they've been and how everyone seems to be just giving up the idea that they're as good as gone. You know, I probably would still follow them, but they've really disappointed me.
All right.
God, you're gonna make me cry, man.
Go ahead.
Ken's gonna make me cry, man. This is awful stuff going on right now.
You know, it's my one team in San Diego. I'll be moved back to just the Padres and San Diego State, but I'll still hold out hope to the end. But man, it does not look good. I used to think there was no chance they were going to LA. Now I'm pretty certain they're gonna be there if a stadium can get done. So I'm just hoping that nothing can get done.
Ken, thanks for calling in.
Thanks, guys.
Stay strong. Stay strong, my friend. Yeah. Stay strong.
Good luck, you guys. See ya.
Ken, obviously, a little down on his Chargers. They're favored by 1.5 points. I don't quite understand why, other than the fact that it is Miami coming to town. But to me, the Chargers season is over. I mean, Miami season's over too, but Dan Campbell is just that kind of coach that ain't giving up until the giving up is done. So I got the Dolphins winning this game. James?
I've got the Dolphins as well. Even if they don't bring Dan Campbell back as the full-time head coach and, you know, kind of drop the interim title, whoever's coming in to coach the Dolphins is going to be pretty screwed. Ndamukong Suh's cap hit next year is, I believe, $25 million. You're bringing in a coach to fail when you've got one guy who's, he may be as good as Ndamukong Suh, but he's not $25 million worth of your cap good. You're stripping everything else out of your lineup when you're paying one player that much.
Yeah, and you look at the Dolphins roster, they have holes everywhere, and they can't afford to be cap strapped. And right now, they're one of two teams in the league that would be over the cap, even with the projected $10 million raise in the salary cap next year. They have holes on their offensive line. They need skill guys. They need to re-sign Lamar Miller. Their secondary is a mess. The linebacker core is devoid of talent. This team, coming into the year, they were looking at the four teams in the AFC East, and I mean, the three teams, because obviously we got the Pats. The Pats are always going to be the best team, right, Pod? But the three other teams, they were looking for a team to fall off, because one of the teams had to, between Buffalo, the Jets, and Miami. And me and a lot of other people picked Miami just based off the fact that they were a typical Mike Tannenbaum team and that they were really top-heavy at a lot of positions. And if any injury struck, they'd be screwed. Those injuries did strike a bit. Cameron Wake is out for the year, but even so, they had they they haven't lived up to expectations. And for the next couple of years, they're going to be in the basement. And I don't think it's even close. As for this game, I'm going to go with the Dolphins because I don't see how the Chargers are able to block Sue. And he's just going to give Phillip Rivers a hard time with pressure up the middle. And Rivers doesn't have the mobility to move from side to side to be able to avoid it. So give me the Dolphins in another 7-9, 8-8 type season.
Interesting number fire. Love San Diego minus 2 at 58.6%. So I feel that much better about my Dolphins pick. Sunday night, Arizona Cardinals at the Philadelphia Eagles. I don't know how this game got flexed in other than the fact that the Cardinals are a playoff team and the Eagles are fighting to be a playoff team that will lose in the first week of the playoffs. So, again, don't quite get why this got flexed into the Sunday night game. And I also don't know why it was this particular game because I've got the Cardinals and I like the Cardinals big. I mean, if anything, they did the Cardinals a favor by flexing it as it's a West Coast team going to the East Coast. But kickoff is now at 8:30 p.m. East Coast time, giving the Cardinals that advantage. And I like it. And I like it a lot. Andrew?
Yeah, I think the Eagles are going to win this game 35-7 on a punt block touchdown, on a kick return touchdown, on a punt return touchdown. on an interception return touchdown and a fumble return touchdown, and that's what's going to happen. But no, seriously, I think John Brown, Michael Floyd, and Larry Fitzgerald are going to be running open all game down the field, and Palmer's going to hit them a couple of times. I also like Arizona big in this game. I don't know, give me 38-14 Arizona.
I will say number fire loves Arizona at minus 3.5, 59.2%. That scares me. I'm looking at some of the useless stats. Cardinals have won 3 of their past 4, including last year. They beat the Eagles 24-20. Of course, that was last year, not this year. I mean, seriously, this shouldn't even be a discussion. James?
Yeah, I've got Arizona as well. I mean, looking at this game, trying to figure out how would the Eagles beat the Cardinals aside from relying on their amazing special teams to shoulder the load. You're going to have to get back at Carson Palmer, which the Eagles do have the ability to do. But when they got at Tom Brady and knocked him down, there were a lot of blitzes. Bruce Arians is smart enough to adjust. Not saying that Belichick is not, but Belichick kind of lacked a run game and a strong offensive line. The Cardinals have that run game. They have a strong offensive line. And, you know, they have several deep threats that are going to prevent Philly from getting back to Palmer quite as often as they got to Brady.
For those of you who don't understand our references to the amazing special teams of the Philadelphia Eagles, it's because our Sunday night host Sitko, who is our Eagles super fan, is literally, and I do mean literally, still celebrating the victory the Eagles had over the Patriots, claiming that it was the greatest shellacking the Eagles had ever given, when in fact the only reason why the Philadelphia Eagles won that game was because of 2 special teams touchdowns. Now, I know you can't take them away, but if you did, the Patriots have a higher score than the Philadelphia Eagles. So take your special teams, Mr. Sitko, and put them where the sun don't shine. Honestly,
special teams note on expected onside kicks, the kicking team recovers, you know, maybe 1 out of 10 times. So on the expected onside kick, the 2 of them that the Patriots did, Eagles were only able to recover half of them. So that's a knock against the special teams there.
Good point. Good point, James. The special teams didn't come through on that particular moment. Whatever. And I'm sure he'll respond as he has every right to on the Sunday night show, which you can hear on Monday morning. Speaking of Monday, the Monday night football game is the Lions at the Saints. And there's literally no one going to be watching this game. I don't even think Lions fans will. And we already know Saints fans put bags on their head. So good luck with the ratings on that one, ESPN. That said, the Saints are favored by 2.5 points. It is a football game, so we will pick it. I will pick the Saints based purely on the fact that I think Drew Brees just doesn't allow his team to lose by that much in the Superdome. And I don't think he's going to allow them to lose to the Detroit Lions. Andrew?
I'm actually going to take the Lions because I don't see how New Orleans is going to cover Tate, Calvin, and Eric Ebron. I think Ebron is going to break out these last couple of weeks, give some Lions fans hope going into the last going into his third year next year. And that to me is a defining matchup. I think Stafford could have a big game, hit Johnson and Tate on a couple of touchdown passes. Give me Detroit.
Well, I mean, definitely for fantasy, you're going to want to start Matthew Stafford. Absolutely. If you still have Matthew Stafford. And if you're in a DFS league, Matthew Stafford would be your pick. Number fire, by the way. Unsure who to go with in this one. Detroit +3, a 45% likelihood. New Orleans -3, a 45.9% likelihood. So by the slimmest of margins, number fire says go with New Orleans. James?
I'm going to go with New Orleans, and I actually will be watching the game. It beats the alternative of spending time with the family around the holidays. And I'm hoping for a shootout, entertaining game. No real logic behind the pick.
It's a home game. We'll use Greg, the Steelers superfan, who's currently in first place in Pigskin Pick'em. We'll use his strategy. It's the home game, the home team. We're gonna take the home team. By the way, not football related. There's this movie coming out this week. You might have heard of about it. It's a little thing, Star Wars, The Force Awakens. I'm gonna be seeing it tomorrow morning with my son, which is great. You know, funny that a guy named Pod Vader is a big Star Wars fan. I will be doing a podcast, not on the Next Fan Up podcast, but on the Week in Podcasting feed. I will certainly let you all know when that is done and released, reviewing not only the new movie, but also having a full discussion about the Star Wars saga as it exists. I famously committed social media suicide, as my brother-in-law put it, by stating that Episode number 4, A New Hope, is the worst movie amongst all of them, including the prequels, which I know everyone loves to hate.
I thought you were doing a podcast on Concussion. I was thinking about Star Wars, but yeah, I mean, I don't think it's that controversial to say the fourth one is. I mean, you're including the prequels, so yeah, so it is a little controversial, but. Out of the legit trilogy, I'd say 4 is to me the least entertaining one of the three.
You know, my son and I rewatched them all over the past month, and if you take number 4 out of context as a standalone movie, it's just a poorly made movie. The story is choppy and sort of undecided. The dialogue is horrible. The action scenes are not very good. They're not very exciting. Conversely, the second movie that George Lucas made, Empire Strikes Back, could quite possibly be the greatest movie ever made. The action scenes are much crisper, much more exciting. The storyline is much more direct. And of course, you're left with the ultimate cliffhanger, Luke, I am your father. I mean, it doesn't get any better than that. It really doesn't. But that's me, Star Wars. I will tweet out the Week in Podcasting when that podcast is up and available for all of you to enjoy. So I hope you enjoy Star Wars. I hope you enjoy the football. Andrew and James, thank you very much for joining me today and doing your job as a super fan. Others, if you'd like to do the job of a super fan, there's plenty of openings available, and we're certainly going to make some sweeping changes in the offseason. I can guarantee you that. Write us in nextfanup@gmail.com. Leave us a review on iTunes. We're Next Fan Up. Just subscribe to us right there on iTunes. Leave us a review. That'd be nice of you. You can also tweet at us @NFU Podcast. And, you know, check out the super fans who did write-ups. you can check those out on our Facebook page, facebook.com/NFU podcast. And so for Andrew and James, I am merely Pod Vader. May the force be with you.
Well, I think we learned today that, you know, this game is 4 quarters long.
And now the podcast is over.
All right. I thought that was a good show, actually. A lot. But
that was a good show.
I don't know. I literally had to poo the entire show, though. Like, in the middle of the show, I went into my bathroom. I decided against it. Right now, that's what has to happen. So I'll speak to you guys next week, hopefully.
That is awesome.
That's gonna be left in the outro, right?
Oh yes.